Welcome to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Eleanor Klibanoff. If you're expecting a baby or have given birth to a son, you probably considered the circumcision question at some point. It's a common practice in the United States. Over half of all newborn boys are circumcised these days. But a vocal group of anti-circumcision activists, called Intactivists, want doctors, parents, and men to think critically about the procedure. On today's show, we'll hear from a man who says he was psychologically harmed by being circumcised as a baby. But first, we're joined by Georgianne Chapin, Executive Director of Intact America. So, Georgianne, I'll start by giving our listeners the lay of the land. The official stance of the American Academy of Pediatrics is that, quote, the health benefits of newborn male circumcision outweigh the risks. Although health benefits are not great enough to recommend routine circumcision for all male newborns, the benefits of circumcision are sufficient to justify access to this procedure for families choosing it, end quote. But your group, Intact America, disagrees with the American Academy of Pediatrics on this. Why?
Well, actually, the way that the American Academy of Pediatrics has stated it, Eleanor, and by the way, I want to thank you for having me on the program, there are a lot of sort of between the lines things they've said there. They said the benefits outweigh the risks, but in that you're quoting a 2012 report, and throughout that report they also say that the complications have never been systematically studied. So to make a statement that the benefits outweigh the risks is really quite irresponsible and not even backed up by the rest of the report. The other thing that we say is that to say it's not recommended for every child leaves the whole burden on parents to somehow figure out whether it's something good for their child. And we know that the pressures coming from the medical community are that circumcision is okay, benign, and should be done. And that is really irresponsible of doctors and puts parents in a really kind of terrible position, because the truth is that circumcision is not medically necessary. It's not carried out in most of the world and throughout human history. And people in Europe and Latin America and Asia who are not circumcised, men do just fine. And that is not anywhere in that equation. And so we feel that it's unfair and unethical to tell parents that this is a benign procedure and that any reason they want it is just fine, not to worry about it. We know, in fact, that there are lots of boys and men who are not fine after being circumcised. So it's a very glib and irresponsible way of presenting a very serious human rights issue.
I mean, I think another way of looking at it, rather than glib, is that it's a fairly moderate stance. It's not saying that you have to get circumcision or that you should have a ban on circumcision. It's just saying that, and they specifically say that you should be given factually correct, non-biased information about circumcision provided before conception and early in pregnancy. So in a lot of ways, it's putting the impetus on the doctors to provide this factually correct information, right,
yes,
rather than the parents.
Right. We know that that doesn't happen. It's almost impossible for doctors to provide non-biased information when, in fact, they are selling circumcision de facto in American hospitals throughout the country. A million boys a year, plus more than a million boys a year, get circumcised by doctors in American hospitals. So, in fact, there's a heavy bias towards circumcision. And, of course, we don't permit even the slightest pinprick of a baby girl's genitals, but we blithely remove what in an adult man is 15 square inches of nerve-laden, blood vessel-laden tissue, as though it's a completely, again, benign and inconsequential procedure. So the language, once again, is sort of moderate, but the baseline is that this is a perfectly okay, perfectly acceptable thing to do. And it's not. It's not treating a disease. The child's not sick. The foreskin is a normal body part. The foreskin has a function. It has a protective function. It has a function in sexual pleasure. And none of that is part of what American physicians are taught to impart to the parents or to their patients. It's okay. Cut it off. You'll be fine. And we know that's not true, and we know that that is unethical. You're not supposed to be removing healthy body parts from people who cannot consent.
for millions of American men, it is fine, right? They have no negative downsides to it. They don't experience decreased sexual pleasure. They don't have medical complications. The rate of complications is extremely low. So are you, for parents who do decide to do this and never again hear from their child saying that they had any problem with it at all, are you saying that they were wrong to make that decision?
Yes, I am saying that they were wrong to make that decision. I think that the problems with circumcision have been tremendously underreported. There's a tremendous, there's a lot of pressure on boys and men not to reveal their feelings. They don't have the information often until they're teenagers. There's a tremendous amount of sexual dysfunction in this country. They're, to say they don't have decreased sexual pleasure, it's as opposed to what? If you are missing a body part your entire life since the first day you were on the earth, how do you know what you would feel? If you didn't have fingertips your entire life, no one's going to tell you that you are not missing anything. You're missing your fingertips and all the sensation that they provide. Again, removal of the foreskin is, a foreskin in an adult man is about 15 square inches of nerve-laden tissue, and it's a boy's body, and he should be able to make the decision himself. It's not a parent's decision, and it's not a doctor's decision to remove a perfectly healthy, normal part from somebody else's body. To say that there are no consequences and nothing is lost is misleading. What's lost is a functional, healthy body part. That's what you're missing, and everything that it does for you.
There was a 2008 study published in the Journal of Sexual Medicine that looked at the sexual function satisfaction of men circumcised as adults, so they did have something to compare it to. And that was over 2,000 men in a randomized sample found that compared to before they were circumcised, 64% of circumcised men reported their penis was much more sensitive.
Given that they had an adult surgery and the scar alone is going to be very sensitive for quite a period of time after an adult circumcision, there have been studies from mostly European, because they're very difficult to get published in the U.S. Dr. Morten Frisch from Denmark published a study recently showing a very statistically significantly greater sexual dissatisfaction among circumcised men and their female partners than among men who are intact and their female partners. Again, you can't, it's your body to decide what to do with. There are women, adult women, who have their clitoral hoods removed because they get greater sexual stimulation if they don't have their prepuce, which is the equivalent of the male foreskin. They don't have that body part. That's their decision as an adult. It is not our decision as adults to remove the body part from a baby. That baby is a person with full human rights and full right to bodily autonomy, and you can't possibly make a decision for a baby that he's going to have more or less sexual satisfaction. Maybe he's going to be celibate. Maybe he's, you don't know what the future of that child is. And to say any other body part, to have to prove harm in order to not cut it off, we would never ask that. We would never say, well, if you remove your little finger, I mean, you can't prove it's not harmful, so let's remove all the little fingers from little babies. Why are we making this? Why are we defending a procedure that has absolutely no medical necessity? I'm not sure if your listeners, I'm sure they probably are not familiar with the history of circumcision in the United States, the medical history, and it hasn't always existed, but rather it started in Victorian times when masturbation was deemed to be a terrible, terrible thing that dissipated men's health. If anyone's seen The Road to Wellville, they know about the Victorians' obsession with sexuality and the need to repress it. And circumcision was seen as a way of keeping boys from masturbating. That was how it came about. It was very definitely a way of repressing sexuality. And then over time, as it became sold by doctors as a symbol of sort of affluence, because women who had their babies born at home by midwives were tended to be lower class, and women who were able to go to hospitals were higher class, and a circumcised penis became a status symbol. Medical justifications have proliferated over time. Again, the rest of the world doesn't do it. Europe doesn't do it. The Scandinavian countries don't do it, and their men are doing just fine. The health status of of people in those countries is the same or better than Americans. We don't gain anything except doctors gain a few dollars in their bank accounts. But as a culture and from a public health standpoint, Americans do not gain anything by tying down baby boys and cutting off their foreskins.
And in some, you know, the other side of that history is that it is also in Muslim and Jewish culture seen as a religious rite of passage. It's part of their religion. Would you not want it to be allowed for people for religious reasons?
In the United States, the number of ritual or religious circumcisions is probably less than 1% of all the circumcisions that take place in U.S. hospitals. If only religious circumcisions were allowed, and when I say religious, I don't mean somebody says, oh, it's in the Bible, that's why I'm doing it, but circumcisions that are carried out as part of a ritual are only really a few thousand a year, and the vast, vast, vast majority of the million baby boys who are cut by doctors in hospitals with absolutely no element of religion. It is simply the culture of big medicine in the United States.
But there are Jewish and Muslim families who want their child to be circumcised, and they still do it in hospital because they want it to be, make sure it's sanitary or make sure it's...
It has no ritual validity. So yes, I'm sure there are. People do all kinds of things for, you know, what they profess to be their cultures. Dr. Andrew Friedman, who's a pediatric urologist from Los Angeles, he's the head of pediatric urology at Cedars-Sinai Hospital, and who has told the story very publicly about circumcising his own son on his parents' kitchen table because he's a member of the tribe, in other words, for Judaism. Also tries to talk parents, he's told me personally, tells parents they don't need to circumcise their children. He has said it's not medically necessary, and in an article published in Pediatrics last year in the journal Pediatrics last spring, said that it's not, for the most part, a medical procedure. It's a decision that people make for cultural reasons. Friedman is very much on the same page. We are actually with calling circumcision a cultural phenomenon and not a medically necessary phenomenon.
Right. But in some places, there are medical benefits to circumcision. I mean, there are conclusive studies that find that in areas with high prevalence of HIV, it can men who are circumcised have lower rates of HIV.
Those studies have never been borne out in modern Western countries, so we really don't know. There were three randomized clinical trials that took place in sub-Saharan Africa, which is hardly the gold standard for American medicine, about 15 years ago, and there's been no long-term follow-up. The only benefit that they even purported was for men being protected from getting HIV from women, nothing about the women who are going to get HIV from the men who are circumcised without being tested for HIV and can pass the infection on to them. That's never been shown to be, circumcision is not associated one way or the other with HIV or other sexually transmitted diseases in Europe or the United States. So in the absence of studies, and they would never carry those studies out in the U.S. because they would be unethical. There is no evidence at all that circumcision... American cemeteries, are full of men who died from AIDS, circumcised men who died from AIDS. And I think that that's not an argument that's really taken seriously at all anymore. It's kind of out there as a popular myth. American Cancer Society doesn't promote circumcision as a way of preventing penile cancer because it doesn't. The rates of breast cancer in men are higher than the rates of penile cancer, and we're not removing men's breasts. So all of these are rationalizations for something that's been in the culture for a long period of time. They're not definitive. And again, there's nothing wrong. We could remove all kinds of body parts as a way of preventing them from getting diseased. We could remove body parts as a way, we could cut off the hands of people born in certain neighborhoods so that they won't steal. We don't know what a child's life is going to be like in the future. We have no right to deprive him or her of a healthy, normal part of his or her body just because we've been taught that it's not a problem.
If you are just joining us, this is Take Note on WPSU. We're talking with Georgianne Chapin, Executive Director of Intact America, about why her group opposes circumcision. Georgianne, Intact America talks a lot about consent and parents not having the right to make this decision for their child, but parents make a lot of medical decisions for their children, including surgeries and things like that. They are allowed to consent to medical procedures for their child legally.
They're allowed
legally.
To consent. I'm also a lawyer, and I've taught bioethics at the law school and university level. Parents are considered able to make proxy consent for medically necessary treatments and surgeries for their children. You cannot take your baby to a doctor and say, you know, my husband's missing the third finger on his left hand and I want my son to look just like him. So could you just cut off the third finger on his left hand? Because the doctor would think that parent was crazy and say, there's nothing wrong with the third finger on his left hand. Why would I cut it off? Well, it's the same thing with cutting off part of his penis. It's not The child is not sick. The only justification for making a proxy consent, a proxy decision for another person is that that person cannot consent themselves and is at risk of getting very, very sick or dying without the treatment that's being proposed. But circumcision is not a treatment. It's not treating anything. It's treating the presence of foreskin, which is a normal body part. So, yes, you're right. Parents can consent to medical treatment on behalf of their children, but it has to be for a purpose. It can't just be a gratuitous removal of a healthy body part.
And that is
bioethics. That is not my opinion. That is a well-established body of bioethics that says that children have autonomy, and if they're not sick, you can't be carving them up. It's not my opinion.
And the one area where there does seem to be some agreement in terms of impact in the United States on babies who are circumcised is around urinary tract infections. And I've got a 2000 study from the year 2000 in the journal Pediatrics that does find that uncircumcised infants were 11 times more likely to develop UTIs and 18 times more likely to be hospitalized with a UTI than circumcised infants.
Very, very, very low rates of UTIs. And girls have twice the number of UTIs than boys do when they're treated with simple antibiotics. If a UTI is from some kind of an internal kidney malformation, cutting off the foreskin is not going to do anything. So again, we've made a decision, you know, dental caries, people with no teeth are never going to develop cavities and dental caries and never going to have root canals or their teeth removed, but we don't cut out healthy teeth. So UTI, if that were a problem, you would expect babies dropping like flies from UTIs in the states where circumcision rates are very low, like California, Washington, Oregon. There's been no epidemiological evidence that urinary tract infections is a terrible problem in this country among babies who have their normal healthy foreskin. So again, there's no dearth of justifications that have been trotted out to rationalize the unjustifiable and the unacceptable deprivation of people, the right to their body. So, we would have no breast cancer if we removed everybody's breasts, men and women, because men get breast cancer. We'd have no penile cancer if we cut off, why not cut off the whole penis? These are all kind of post hoc rationalizations for an ethically and medically unjustifiable surgery that is, again, imposed on babies who have a full set of human rights to their bodily autonomy.
Okay, and let's now bring in Adam Zeldis, who is a intactivist who works with your group, Intact America. You guys don't just address what you see as the medical side and maybe the research-based side, but also the psychological effects that you say circumcision has on men. Adam, can you tell me a little bit about your experience and how you got involved with this movement?
I was circumcised at birth, and I was actually pretty young. I'm 34 now. I was about 16 or 17 years old when I woke up one morning hearing Howard Stern screaming on the radio about circumcision. I didn't really know what it was at the time. I knew it had to do with cutting the penis. I didn't know pretty much anything else. I knew it had been done to me. But he had this viewpoint that it was mutilation. This was probably about 1999, which was rather progressive of him to be speaking of the topic at all. And my first thought was, this is that guy's crazy. I don't know what he's talking about. I took to the internet, which was, you know, kind of in its early infancy back then. And there was plenty of circumcision information online, where I could watch a circumcision. I could read about how much skin is actually removed. 20,000 nerve endings in the foreskin. And it became clear to me that I wasn't living in the world that I thought I was. You know, I was like, I'm growing up in America. This is a civilized country. And here I was sort of faced with assimilating this new information that I actually was a victim of a genital cutting practice that was purely you know, just based in our society and really had no medical benefit and was, if anything, completely to my sexual detriment.
So you feel like it has been to your detriment to have been circumcised?
So I think there's sort of a long road of for a man when he learns sort of the truths around circumcision. It's very easy to live in the world of ignorance is bliss, because, you know, how often are people talking about penises? How often are people talking about their own penises? To suddenly be told that you are harmed is very difficult information to assimilate. And so to say, my initial response was that of anger. You know, I was like, this was something that was taken from me. I will never feel what it's like to have a foreskin. I will never feel what it's like to have those 20,000 nerve endings. Now, the sort of prevailing opinion of most circumcised men is to sort of brush that off. I mean, this is a very manly thing to do, is to say, I'm not affected. It didn't hurt me. You know, that is sort of the quote-unquote manly response to have. And I think you see that amongst most circumcised men. It's also one of the biggest reasons why circumcision can survive the way it does. Nobody's talking about it. It's hard to complain. When you do complain, when you do say, hey, I think this affected my sex life, people laugh at you. People tell you you're crazy. You know, you look for support, and there pretty much is none, not to mention that it's hard to talk about your penis in the first place. So that's essentially the road that a man goes down when he learns of circumcision, if he's going to think about this and reflect on it at all. A lot of men don't.
Is your hope that more people will start feeling a sense of loss when previously maybe they were perfectly happy?
I don't wish negative feelings on anybody. If you can take in this idea and understand that it does negatively affect people, that men can grow older and be unhappy about their circumcision status, and you can say, you're right, this is wrong, I shouldn't be doing it to a child, a child should have the right to choose, then I have no problem with you never feeling as though you were harmed. Many men are capable of that. I certainly have come around to becoming capable of that. Being emotionally attached to the issue is one of the most difficult things about the issue. So no, I don't wish those negative feelings on people, but what I do hope is that people start really considering it and really thinking, you know, what did happen to me? Was that right? Did I lose something because of it? And, you know, is this right to continue? You know, should I circumcise my son?
And Georgianne, I mean, you've said that your group is not working, you're not hoping for a legal ban on this. What do you think will be the best effort at getting the public opinion changed around circumcision?
I think the public opinion is changing, and we've seen an incredible increase in awareness and people talking about this. Intact America's Facebook page now has more than 50,000 people on it and very active conversations. I think that social change, the needle moves very slowly, and then all of a sudden you reach a tipping point, and an idea that was unthinkable before, leaving your child normally intact and whole, becomes popular. Again, you know, you asked Adam, does he want people to feel bad? No, we want people to stop. We want doctors to not cover their ears and their eyes and be in denial over the harm they're causing to children, the gratuitous harm, and just say, you know what, it's not necessary. I'm not going to do this. I'm sorry. I don't do circumcisions. You know, that's the kind of change that we're looking for, and I do think it's coming. I can't predict a date, but we're going to see a very precipitous fall in the circumcision rate as people become more and more aware.
And one of the reasons that I think your group has gotten a lot of attention is you're very public, and the whole intactivist movement is very public. You know, men show up to protests wearing white jumpsuits with red paint over the crotch area. They carry, you know, very inflammatory signs and get a lot of media attention and coverage. Some people have equated some of those techniques to sort of almost being like a fringe group and an extreme protest to what is, a fairly common accepted practice. How do you respond to people who say that?
Well, I mean, number one, you know, I'm a 65-year-old healthcare executive and lawyer, and I don't walk around in a white suit with bloodstains on the crotch. I've been a college professor and a law school professor
but
and
that
a healthcare
group
executive.
Was so the intactivist of the month from your group. So
yeah, well, you know, every human rights movement has, if you read, you know, social change literature, has different tactics and different groups. And so if that's what it takes, some people want to raise awareness that way, and it makes people uncomfortable, that's just going to happen. Some people are more comfortable, you know, writing op-ed pieces and writing research articles, like the one that came out a couple months ago in the International Journal of Human Rights, documenting self-reported circumcision harm. You know, it takes all kinds of committed people to change injustice, to wipe out injustice. And I don't defend or condemn anybody for speaking out in a way that their heart tells them to.
If parents are given fair and balanced information, I know you feel like there's not that information out there, but let's say if parents were given fair and balanced information and, you know, for easier hygiene or UTIs or religious reasons, whatever reason they decide to make that decision, should they be given the right to make that decision for their child?
Well, again, the baby is not sick. There's nothing wrong with the body parts. So parents do not have an unlimited right to make decisions about their children's bodies. They can't, you know, beat their child with pipes and sticks, and they can't take the child in and ask for a prophylactic appendectomy. So it's not legitimate part of medicine. It's simply not a therapeutic procedure, and I do believe that doctors should refuse to perform procedures that are unethical and violate their patients' rights. The parents are not the patient. The baby is the patient. And the baby's not sick, and the baby has not been able to grant consent to have a normal part of his body removed. So I think it has no place in medicine.
Thank you so much for joining us, Georgianne and Adam.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Eleanor.
That was Georgianne Chapin and Adam Zeldis of Intact America. Their group opposes elective circumcision in the United States. The American Academy of Pediatrics has said the benefits of circumcision outweigh the risks, but parents should be free to decide for themselves. To hear other interviews in the Take Note series, visit wpsu.org/take-note. I'm Eleanor Klibanoff, WPSU.